Broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia, this is CJSF 90.1 FM.
Welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I am your host, Brandon, and joining me today is Hale. If you're a listener of philosophy, if you're listening to the radio, or if you're listening to us online, you probably are familiar with Gregory Sadler, the YouTube philosophy guy. He posts some incredible lectures. They're very, very expansive. His range is quite impressive.
Like, I've known about Gregory Sadler since probably before even going into university. He honestly seems like a great guy on a personal level. He's got a lot more kind of personal YouTube stuff. But he does, as you said, he does a lot of like really deep dive and like focused reviews of particular readings and all this kind of stuff. And so if we've got any students listening in university, or perhaps if you're taking some sort of a high school course that's digging into some philosophical topics, a cheat code can be to go and watch, you know, several hours of Gregory Sadler's reviews and discussions and lectures on, you know, specific topics on Kant or whatever. You get some really good info there.
Yeah, but also Sadler's advice is you do have to do the reading. You can't just
Of course.
You have to read the primary text. So it's a good supplement. I don't know if I would call it a cheat, because you would be cheating if you didn't read it. But in any case, so he has this series that he's been doing for a couple of years now called Sadler's Quick Takes, and it's more or less him just kind of responding to trends or themes in the way that people are thinking about or talking about doing philosophy. And he released one the other day, actually, it's very recent, where he talks about how long it should take to work through any given philosopher's works. Now, he doesn't actually have like a set schedule for how you should, you know, how long it should take to read Kant or how long it should take to read Plato or Eric. He doesn't have any prescriptions like that. These quick takes are more or less, they have a theme of alleviating anxieties or worries, or, you know, you've put on these kind of expectations that you need to do this or you need to do that. If you're not doing this, you don't know what you're doing. Sadler's kind of there to say, no, like, this is just unthought received wisdom that you are free to let go of when it comes to reading any given philosopher's work. Take as long as it is necessary for you to take. There's other videos about books that have auras, he calls them, approaching books that have intimidating auras like Hegel's Phenomenology of Spirit. It's a book. You can go buy it and you open it and you open it to page one. If you want to read it, read it. If you don't feel like you have to read it because everyone is reading this. Again, it has that kind of therapeutic effect on philosophy students. So it can be very grounding, and it's all very grounded and reasonable advice. But there was something interesting in the latest video that Sadler put out that I've started to notice as a trend in a couple of his responses. I'm thinking particular, the one about him talking about how long it should take to read philosophers' works, but also in the videos where he talks about being truly well-read, and also on the question addressing, you know, should I read philosophy in chronological order? And his answer is that it's completely relative to you and your goals and your project and your engagement with philosophy. So you can begin to approach. So not only does he give you the therapeutic talk of, okay, the received wisdom, you don't have to abide by that if that is unrealistic or if it is burdening you. But then he also supplements it with how to figure out this stuff, because you do want to discern your pace, or you do want to know where you want to dip in, or you do want to have some idea of your scope. So he gives you a sort of method for figuring out what works for you. And it's okay, it's not really a method for figuring out what works for you, but it is to remind you that this needs to work for you. These, your engagement with philosophy is relative to what you want out of it, what you get out of it, what you find valuable in it, what you have grown or created in doing this, what you fostered in it. And I was struck by this, not just because I think this is like good, he's very grounded. He knows how to bring people away from the anxieties that can sometimes come with doing such a sometimes daunting thing like reading philosophy. Makes it very approachable in that way, not only by offering helpful lectures, but just by giving you a different attitude or mindset to approach it. But it also, what struck me about it was that I felt like this was a sort of new way of asking myself questions I had been asking about why I do philosophy. And it felt very different. Like, I had never actually asked the question, okay, well, what do I get out of philosophy? What project do I have? Now, of course, as philosophy students, I think, and as readers of philosophy, I think we're constantly bombarded by the question, why do you study philosophy? And oftentimes we have to give these non-answers, like, I'm doing it for my education or something like that. And maybe that's a noble answer, but sometimes these are more or less just to deflect people who are asking the question in a kind of accusative way, right? People are not really asking this question, I suppose we would say, in good faith. They want a justification for you doing philosophy. So we give them these non-answers. But when we're being honest with ourselves, and these were the kinds of answers that I thought I was giving myself before, you know, I would tell myself, well, why am I reading philosophy?
Can I make a suggestion or just throw something out there? Can we maybe like review what some of those non-answers have been for each of us? Obviously, we're going to get into more of an interesting introspective and personal discussion about like why are we doing this? What's the point? But there's been many people who have posed that question to me in the past. And my response, I'll go first. Like early on, my response was, I think I want to go to law school. Which wasn't true. Like, I mean, like, I think there was a part of me that believed that, but there was never really like a fundamental commitment as to why I was, a practicing philosophically interested person. And then I think another component, which I sometimes still draw to, although it's not like the main one, is it really enhances your ability to think critically. Now, I actually think that's more of a genuine answer, but it's certainly not anywhere close to complete for me. It's a very small portion. There's something a lot, if just thinking critically was the main thing, then, you know, myself, and I'm sure most other students of philosophy would, you know, stick to their philosophy 101 critical thinking course textbook, which is great and is super useful, but there was something more going on that drew me to philosophy.
Yeah, I think your second answer is really interesting, because there's a kind of insidious nature to this accusative question where you really can give the answer that you can cloak your legitimate reasons in certain ways that make them rhetorically appealing for people who want a justification. So maybe critical thinking is something you value, but these people don't, when they ask this question, they don't want, you know, why is this valuable to you? They want, why would you spend so much time and spend all this money on a tuition to get a degree that is not going to pan out into, well, who knows whether it can or cannot pan out, but it is a risky education to get when there are more surefire ways to get a high paying job.
One of the most enlightening and I think honest conversations I had, for listeners out there who are in philosophy and are looking to move forward in careers or whatever it might be, at one point I was thinking about doing my master's, and I actually set up a meeting at a major university in Ontario when I was out there visiting some family. So I thought, you know what, I'll go to the master's program, I'll meet with the main advisor there, person who runs the program. We sat down, we had a really nice hour or two conversation about philosophy or goals, where is that. But one of the things he said to me that I really appreciate was, for so long people have been telling me there's a lot you can do with this degree, there's like jobs and stuff, and he just straight up was like, it is not a very employable path. Like he's like, don't listen to what other people have to tell you about this. There's, if you want like good careers and good vocational stuff, there's way better stuff to be taking. And I really appreciated hearing that from someone. I know it's kind of pessimistic, but I do genuinely think, being realistic, he was being quite honest with me. I think people really, but I think this speaks a little bit to about what we're going to get into, which is like, if you're going to like doing this, people who have this passion for philosophy, it can't, like, once you start justifying vocational career-oriented reasons for why, at least for myself, I've always found there's something inauthentic going on. And I think that a lot of times, even myself, I found trying to buttress my path, you know, trying to sort of dismay my doubt a little bit by saying, oh, there's this job, or I'm going to go here with it, or I'm going to go to law school, or whatever it's going to be. But that's not really the main reason, and it's frankly not the best path to get to any of those points in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, if you wanted to study for, well, I mean, I don't know what you would do if you were to want a kind of preliminary education for law school, but I'm sure that there are more standard tracks for, you know, a preliminary education for law school than philosophy. Philosophy might be an important part. But
yeah, not to get like off track this, but I actually think philosophy is a normal undergrad for going to law school. It's a relatively common one, but it's certainly not some sort of like specialized law school oriented degree, which is something that I kind of told myself for some time, or at least told other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the other people that you need to answer to. When you know why you do it, you don't need to answer your questions. You just do it, which kind of brings us to the next way that we have this question of why do we do philosophy, which, just to anticipate, interestingly, this kind, like, what we're talking about here now is the authentic things that we tell ourselves that we know we can't really tell anyone else, what we get out of doing philosophy, the things that we value about it, the ineffable consequences of doing philosophy, the changes, the self-transformations that might even happen from doing philosophy. But interestingly enough, when I was listening to Sadler talk about, or ask, you know, about what do you get out of reading this work or studying this philosopher, it was actually those, what we think of as authentic questions, that I was kind of shaken out of, and I was brought to something a little bit different. I do think that this domain of the grand and ineffable questions of why we do philosophy are important, maybe even central. I'm not saying that what I was brought to is more important, but it was just interesting because it was a different perspective. And if there's anything that I do philosophy for, it's being introduced to different and more interesting perspectives and ways of kind of triangulating my perceptions of things and having new ways of approaching them. So I think that we've, you know, by talking about the inauthentic answers to the questions, we have been negatively talking about the authentic answers to the questions. And I think that we're a bit more familiar with them because we experience them or question them or mull over them. But this angle was a bit different because when Sadler was talking about the project or goal, specifically the word that I want to use here is goals, the goals that you have when reading philosophy, when you are studying, when you're in the text, those are a little bit different than answers that you have for, okay, well, why am I here? Why am I studying philosophy? Why am I pursuing this kind of life? And it was something that I don't think I had ever actually asked myself, because maybe at the time I was busy. I was so busy reading a text that I didn't understand why I was reading a text. Let me try and put the sense of what this new kind of question is. It more or less comes down to holding a book, looking at this book, and asking, why am I reading this book? What am I doing with this text in my hand? What am I doing this activity for? And I've been conscious of, so I'll give my answer and maybe this will fill in the question a little bit, because the question is really new to me too, but I'll give you my answer because I have had a sort of, it made me realize when I reflected on the answers that I have to this question, I have had, or I have asked this question before and I've had an answer for it. And it's that when I go and I read and I do philosophy in this way, I'm getting classic texts under my belt, right? Like, this is the reason I am going into the classroom. This is the reason I am pursuing my philosophical education. Again, we already have answers for why are we doing this. Now, what are you doing in the classroom? What are you doing in front of this book? The answer was usually, I've got to acquaint myself with the classics, right? I have to read this because if I don't, then I don't know what other people are talking about when they talk about this. And if I'm going to do philosophy, people are going to be talking about whatever book. I realized that I had an answer to that particular kind of question of sitting in front of a text and asking myself, why am I reading this? And when it came to being in a classroom, the other answers I would give were, well, I have to do the assignment, you know? Going into a class kind of gives you hooks to hang reasons up on. Assignments are reasons to read a text. You have to read it, and you have to read it carefully if you want to do the assignment well. I feel like I'm getting a more material sense of the question, maybe even more present-minded sense of the question. The distinction that I see between these two is, in the first sense, we have these ideas about why we do philosophy as a form of life, right? We tell ourselves why we have picked this kind of life that we want to engage with and, you know, basically live. But in this other sense of the question that Sadler is alluding to, he's asking, okay, you want to read Heidegger. Why do you want to read Heidegger? What do you think that you're going to get out of this? What value do you think you're going to get out of reading Heidegger? Are you reading it because you want to understand Sartre better? Are you reading it because you want to read a foundational text in existentialism? Are you interested in deconstruction? Are you interested in a particular argument in Heidegger? And this kind of goal-directed question in doing philosophy is way different than these narratological questions that we ask about, well, why do we do philosophy? Well, because it's my passion, or because I have some kind of you know, it's like a spiritual practice I engage in or something like that.
You know, it's a really interesting point to make because it's one of those classic things that we've, you and I have talked about before, and we bump up all the time against in philosophy, which is sometimes the more like sometimes we skip over the more practical and closer to home reasons for the kind of grand narratives or the like the deeper wisdom that we think we're finding. But I kind of, you know, having been out of school for a little bit and working in a particular field that certainly tests philosophical skills or introspection, you know, on a day-to-day basis on some level, it's interesting because I've kind of had a similar experience where I find my philosophical interest comes from now is less like grand motivations for figuring out, you know, like life, the theories of life, like what's going on, and more like, I think that healthy people, most people are relatively attuned to what is right. I have a kind of more and more, I kind of lean towards a sort of virtue ethics but also with a little bit of emotivism where it's kind of like, you just have this like sense, you know, that like you're doing the right thing, but then we often don't really explore that. We don't like backpedal and ask ourselves like, well, why is helping people who are suffering good? First, you're out there and you're living it and you're doing it. You're just out in the world operating, being a practically minded human being, relatively like effective. And then the philosophy comes in those quieter moments where I'm like, okay, I think I'm doing the right thing. I really do believe that. I think that as people, we're actually a lot better at, you know, condensing down and packaging our reasons effectively into feelings or senses than we give ourselves credit for. So how do we kind of like, what's that Foursquare thing? But it's almost like unwrapping one of those.
Right.
It's like it's like you already have it all wrapped up. It's all ready to go. But like, there's something about philosophy that allows me now to kind of take a step back and sort of think, okay, well, why am I, I'm quite confident I'm doing the right thing, but like, I'm still interested to know like why I think that. But that's something that's not normally something that you go about in the moment. It's definitely more of an introspective, like the pause, the step back. It's been very like helpful and interesting for me, and I find is really how it takes it on itself today. It's, you know, living first and thinking second.
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah, and this is something that I think in my own readings, like it's kind of an amalgam at this point, but it's. I think I actually get this from Arendt mostly, but I wonder how it could be any other way, right? I mean, you imagine trying to actually live your life while questioning it or asking why. In a certain way, you do have to live it, and then there needs to be separate time allocated to questioning and reflecting if you're going to do that.
I'm not trying to be mean to anyone out there or anything like that, but you say like, I'm not sure how I can do it any other way, and I agree, like at base level, how could you do it any other way? But I think, you know, for both of us, I'm sure we're familiar, have interacted with people or even felt this way on our own, where it's like there's a certain kind of, especially student but even like more professional level philosopher shtick where like it's as if the thing they're trying to reverse that order. Right? Like the thinking is trying to come first, right? Like, and I've seen it in people before, and it ends up with generally what I see when people act like that or sort of trying to force that mode is it comes across as very awkward. And this doesn't mean, and like almost, this is like a kind of classic, like I think pseudo intellectual position. It's not something you can really do. It's like, so you're always like out there living life. You can't like not be doing that. But there is a way in which I think sometimes people will get caught up in the like so over, almost like overly caught up in philosophical thinking, overly caught up in interrogating everything that it prevents them from fully engaging in whatever they're trying to do. Or I think more often than not becoming kind of dismissive or nihilistic to whatever degree someone can actually do that. About like, you know, their life world, for to use like a kind of phenomenological term, and they can't really like it, they just it comes across very, like I said, very awkward, very unable to like actually have regular effective interactions with people and that kind of, and you know, really fully partake in projects and interests and all this kind of stuff. And it doesn't seem to be very certainly doesn't seem to be very happy, but it also, it seems to be kind of, for that, to excuse my language, but kind of ass backwards.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. I was going to say it's, you started it by saying that they, in that mode of engaging or trying to live your life, it does get things a bit backwards. People try to start with the philosophizing and the reflection and make living a product of that. And in a certain way, we do want philosophy to modify our lives. If it didn't have, you know, if ethics didn't actually result in people living better lives, then what would be the point? I mean, in a certain way, maybe even understanding in it is a kind of end in itself. But we do want ethics to cash out into happier lives. So in some sense, philosophy should modify us, but it's when it's completely reversed, when it is awkward, when it is kind of stilted. I think the thing that is characteristic of this is that it tries to lay out everything kind of in advance, and so it can't anticipate the unanticipated, because it tells, you know, a totalizing system tells itself it's exhausted all possibilities, and then it finds some possibility it hasn't exhausted and it doesn't know what to do. So it kind of you know, in that, maybe the awkwardness is a result of stopping to try and think and figure it out before you do it. But there's an alternative. You can just make mistakes and then learn from those mistakes, or you can test things out in one case, and then maybe in another case you try something else out, and you try experiments in living in a certain way, which is one way of making your, I guess, ethical or moral theories flexible, by presenting opportunities for things like that.
I think the one thing that people often lose out on or miss out on who are philosophically minded or interested is getting out there sometimes in the world, trying new things, putting themselves out there, having different activities or interests that aren't like overtly philosophically related. That's extremely broad, right? Like that doesn't mean literally, like, you know, everybody's like, okay, well, that means you got to go buy a sailboat and you got to do a solo trip across the Pacific. And I'm like, if you're doing that, that's probably the wrong thing to do. One, because it's like not safe unless you really know what you're doing, but also because like, you're kind of missing the point, I think.
Yeah, it has this sort of stereotypical...
It's too intentional.
It has this stereotypical false radicality to it. You know, like the stereotypical midlife crisis of like, you know, I'm going to get like a motorbike or something like that.
Well, motorbikes are fun, though.
Well, motorbikes are cool, but if you're doing this, it's like, this is the stock image of...
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that out there, but it's more like... There's a lot of little interests and activities that people can explore, even within stuff that they're already doing, that I think gives people insights upon reflection that they would never otherwise get. It's kind of like fuel for that philosophical interest later on that you wouldn't otherwise get from just reading. And I think I have... Actually, I'm going to pause and just say that you're listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. And today we're discussing our philosophical interests, our reasons for doing philosophy, where that kind of originates from. We'll get back into the show right now. Here's what I'm going to say, and I'm trying to think carefully how to word this. I have definitely interacted with people who I think have gone too far into the books, right? They're not like enough out in the real world. There's a lot of crazy stuff written in philosophy. Like a lot of stuff that really, like, I look back on now, especially being someone who is like really, I would consider myself someone who is relatively out there in the world doing things, interacting with people, all sorts of very varied situations. And there's a lot of stuff out there that I think, for lack of a better, I kind of hate using this word, but I'm just going to use it. It's just kind of toxic. And I think it's really easy for people who get too embedded in that to end up slipping into, this is something you and I have talked about many times, I think on the show and in personal conversations, get really easily slip into frameworks that tend to be quite all-encompassing, whether they be in a like a positive, like positing things about the world, or more of a negation oriented framework, that tend to have some really nasty undertones to them. And I've found a lot of times that like I've interacted people, chat people with that, like who are really like just really focused on the books and really focused on this, just like, you know, getting super duper just into like Hegel or whatever, and they everything about Hegel, and they frame everything through Hegel.